This week on the show, Craig Baldo, Mark McKinney, Hannah Pilkus, and that's right, me, Dave Hill. Get over it, you tit. It says, who writes this stuff? I don't talk like this. It's the novelizers.
Don't want your popcorn. Don't want your milk duds. Don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance. Don't show me fist fights. Just show me words printed out in other book lights. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie. Give me sentences, paragraphs, nothing to see. Novelize the movie. Write a book, turn it into a podcast.
Welcome to the Novelizers. We've got a great show. And we have a special, not that surprising guest in the studio this week, the lovely Mr. Steve Agee. Hey, Steve.
I'm back, still wearing the same clothes.
Get a job, man. It's been like 2 months. You just hang out online waiting for us to record. You're the only one of us who does have a job. How you doing, Steve? What's new?
Pretty good. Literally nothing.
Yeah. It, probably by the time this airs, you know, World War III will have broken out. And we're just here like...
Possible.
We record in advance.
Yeah, who knows if podcasts will even exist when this air is supposed to air.
Well, I hope it airs because, man, is it a great show. Who is on this amazing show, people? Tell me.
I'm glad you asked. We've got Craig Baldo. He was doing stand-up all over TV for about 15 years ago. Now he works in advertising, teaches at Montclair Film and... Right. Who wrote this bio? Did you write? It sounds kind of sad.
Craig Baldo wrote that one. A hilarious stand-up comedian. Mark McKinney, a comedian and actor who is a member of the comedy troupe The Kids in the Hall. He's also appeared in Superstore, SNL, and Man Seeking Woman.
And Hannah Pilkus.
A comedian and actor known for her viral Vine videos and appearances on The Chris Gethard Show.
Oh, forget it. I want to give this show all my money. I think everyone else should too. Go to Patreon and search the Novelizers and support it.
Do it now.
Hurry.
Steve, I feel like over the months, it's kind of become your role to tell us where we are in the story.
It's weird considering I've never seen this, but I still know where we are. Johnny comes back and he and Baby interrupt the Kellermans' performance with their own dance. Everyone joins in. Johnny and Baby finally land the lift.
It's about time.
Oh, I've been waiting for this for so long. And Doc finally makes amends with Johnny and Baby.
Mark McKinney, novelize me.
The Novelizers Podcast, Chapter 17, The Last Dance. Novelized by Craig Baldo. Narrated by Mark McKinney. After leaving Kellerman's, Johnny broke every speed limit on his departure from the Catskills, leaving Baby and the rest of them in the rearview. But then a brief pit stop at Wawa gave him pause to think. Wait a minute. I can't let these summering Jews end the season with a sing-along by that group of high school chorus rejects and Newman from Seinfeld. Also, he realized he'd left his black leather-bound diary somewhere in the lodge where the goodbye ceremony was taking place. A diary full of secrets that could ruin him. His Kirk Douglas sex dreams, his thoughts on Alcatraz and America's prison system in general, his armpit fetish. And although he was needed elsewhere in the world, specifically in Buffalo to run his dance gigolo startup, he knew that he had to turn the car around and head back to Kellerman's to finish what he had started with Baby. He also needed to find out her real name, maybe get her phone number so that they could stay in touch over the winter, maybe meet up in Nyack or something and get dinner. He raced back to Kellerman's, coasting through the campground gates on an empty tank. He'd later announce the need to siphon gas from one of the 30 Chevrolet Impalas in the resort parking lot. Embarrassing, but he'd have no choice. Johnny approached the lodge door, popped a breath mint, stuffed the front of his pants with a small summer squash, and entered the sweltering room filled with forlorn greasers and narcoleptic Richies. At the sight of Johnny, the other dirty dancers sprung to life, realizing that dirty dancing was in the house. The dirty dancing might actually prevail that night, reminding them that the ways of dirty dancing would always survive in those hills as they had for centuries.
back to the time when Native Americans dirty danced to summon rain and get laid, depicted years later in the film Dirty Dances with Wolves. Johnny had no time for pleasantries with his friends. He needed to stop the train wreck performance on stage and give them a real show. He needed to find that diary. Most importantly, he needed to find out what the hell Baby's name was. It couldn't have really been Baby. What kind of idiotic parents were so strapped for a name that when the baby popped out, they were like, it's a baby, so I guess let's name it Baby? He spotted Baby across the room, sitting with her parents in a... Wait a minute. No. You got to be kidding me. She was sitting against a wall, leaning on an adjacent stone pillar, making it look as if she was in a... No, no, no fucking way. Yes way. It appeared to Johnny as if Baby's parents may have suggested she sit in a chair located in what resembled a corner. Though it wasn't technically a corner of the room, it was just one of the many right angles that existed throughout the space. It's doubtful even if the architect of that room would have labeled where Baby was sitting a corner. It was more of a place where the wall met an engaged support column or pilaster. In fact, Baby had scored one of the more choice spots in the lodge, a pilaster that allowed her to lean back and rest her eyes during the abysmal butchering of voices, hearts, and hands. In the past, people had fought to sit there, but that night, when the doors opened at 7:15, Baby beelined straight for it and secured her nook for the evening. Her parents hadn't put her there at all. Johnny was about to misinterpret the whole scenario. Though metaphorically, he was dead on about Baby being put in a corner. She had been kept in the corner her whole life, and Johnny was about to dirty dance her the hell out of there permanently, but not without a fight. Johnny approached the table, speaking firmly yet softly to Dr. Hausman as to not arouse Catskill's security. Nobody puts Baby in a corner. Again, not a real corner. Translation, I'm about to dry hump your daughter on stage in front of all these people. Baby thought to herself, holy shit, this is not going to end well, as she sat frozen in her chair, now fully awake. Johnny reached out his hand to Baby. She knew her choice in that moment would be a pivotal one. Should she allow Johnny to escort her to the stage, she'd risk losing her dad's respect and, more importantly, her inheritance. But if she kicked Johnny to the curb, refused to let the jaws of life extract her from the wreckage that was her white-collar world of privilege, she might never feel alive again. She chose to dry hump. As Johnny led Baby to the stage, he whispered sweetly to her, I have no idea what your real name is. Baby replied, Francis, I'm pretty sure I told you when we met. Hmm? Still whispering? I must have totally spaced. Francis? Yeah, I guess that sounds right. The two climbed the stage towards the company of crap singers still clucking their way through the Kellerman fight song. As Johnny and Baby marched across stage, one by one, the aghast singers trailed off mid-cluck, dumbfounded by the interruption. Lisa was the last to shut the hell up. As Johann Sebastian Bach once said, I weep for the tone deaf. Johnny spoke into the microphone.
Sorry about the disruption, folks, but I always do the last dance of the season. And I can tell most of you are ready to drown yourselves in the lake right about now with the scheduled entertainment.
A sea of nods in the audience confirmed this. Johnny continued.
But this year, somebody told me not to. So I'm going to do my kind of dancing with a great partner who's not only a terrific dancer, but somebody who's taught me that, well, that as shallow as rich people seem, with your tight tennis shorts, Ivy League pinky rings, and complete lack of empathy for the working class, every once in a while, one of you will cross the tracks and discover that us townies, us greasers, well, that all we want to do is grind up on each other. It's all we've ever wanted. We're not all petty thieves and pro-abortion. We're trained dancers who carved out a genre of ballroom that involves rubbing our genitals against each other. It's quite innocent, really. don't get me wrong. We've all popped woodies at one time or another. Any man or woman with blood pumping through their veins would get worked up doing this stuff no matter what side of the tracks you're from. Like, I had this cousin Danny, a mechanic and a hell of a dirty dancer, who met this Australian chick last summer at the beach. She was a totally prissy rich girl. But the two of them went together like Rama Lama Lama, ka-ding-a, ding-a-dong-dong. This is even after she slammed his dick in a car door. Danny couldn't dirty dance for 3 weeks after that. But I digress. That somebody I was talking about taught me that there are people willing to stand up for other people, no matter what it costs them. Somebody who's taught me about the kind of person I want to be.
He looked to Baby, stumped once again on her name. She mouthed Francis to him. It was the name of an angel. Duh, of course, he mouthed back, then turned to the crowd.
Miss Frances Hausman.
At hearing Johnny utter his daughter's name, Dr. Hausman rose from his chair, ready to end this guy once and for all. But before he could rush the stage, his once passive better half broke her silence, commanding him to sit the fuck down. He obeyed, remembering the last time she took this tone with him resulted in 16 months of blue balls. It was at this moment Dr. Hausman realized he was no match for any of the women in his life. In truth, his wife had had him on a short lease since prom, and now his baby daughter was about to be twirled silly by some two-bit hood in front of half of Westchester's medical community. The ensemble of discordant vocalists dispersed, fearing their lives, leaving Baby center stage alone in the spotlight. Then something very strange happened, something no one there that night could explain. By some sleight of hand, Johnny produced a 7-inch vinyl record from his leather jacket, a 45 he always carried with him in case of a dirty dancing emergency, and handed it to Billy, who was spinning on the ones and twos rather than just on the one that night. And to be more specific, one single-speaker Kenwood record player. However, the sound produced from this lo-fi system was incredible. With just a single 3-watt output, the room was somehow filled with Dolby Digital surround sound audio. Hearing it, the resort's 98-year-old band leader nearly crapped his pants. And the song itself was from some other time, almost like it was recorded 25 years in the future with synthesized bells, electronic drums, and alien vocal stylings. Nonetheless, it was about to accompany a performance that would go down in Borscht Belt history. Now, I had the time of my life, and I never felt this way before, sang the vocalist. Johnny seductively approached Baby on stage, beckoning her with a playful forefinger curl, the universal sign for come here. A prude audience sat captivated. Johnny clasped Baby around her waist and began swaying her from side to side, like a sack of grass seed being distributed across a lawn. Eyes locked, they were in perfect sync. They needed to be to win over these judges. Bulgaria was especially critical. Johnny then lifted Baby's left arm, doing the old hand caress down the armpit move, which triggered his fetish, immediately reminding him of his diary. Where was it? Tucked somewhere in the wings of this rinky-dink stage. He faced the added distraction of spotting his precious journal to the already daunting challenge of nailing this dance, dirty or otherwise, which they hadn't rehearsed in days, what with all the drama surrounding Penny, the Schumachers, and the body that had been found at the bottom of the lake on Tuesday. Johnny gave Baby a peck on the nose as the music kicked in. They were off. The pair flowed gracefully into their routine as Johnny stole glances around the room in hopes of spotting his prized book of secrets. They were absolutely slaying the dance, weaving a tapestry with their feet. Baby's family looked on in astonishment.
When did she learn to dance like this? How did we not know? Are we going to make a sequel to this story set in Havana?
The magic on stage caused a swelling of hearts at Kellerman's that night.
It was as if these two humans had just popped the collective corks from the buttholes of every man, woman, and child in that room. Marge Hausman felt such a connection to her daughter's movements, she even suggested to Jake, "I think she gets it from me." This gave Dr. Hausman pause and frankly ticked him off. He thought to himself, "Slow your roll, honey. You're an okay dancer, but I seem to recall you tripping over a waltz at the Goldstein wedding last February. What makes you think this has anything to do with you?" "Never mind that now. I need to think of a way to apologize to Baby because I'm the world's worst father."
Johnny lifted and spun Baby in an elegant twirl, her dress billowing like an inverted calla lily reeling in the late summer.
Okay, omit this metaphor. Just know the shit was graceful.
Then the two snuck in a couple of pelvic thrusts to meet their dirty dancing quota, setting off screams from the greasers and hormonal awakenings within the children, indoctrinating them into adulthood months ahead of their bar and bat mitzvahs. But things were about to get way steamier. Johnny gave Baby a gentle kiss on the hand and leapt from the stage like an Alvin Ailey action hero, sticking the landing center aisle amidst the cheering crowd. He glanced back at Baby as if to say, "Stay put. I need to do something. I need to show these people just how filthy I can dance so that they know I'm a man of integrity. Don't worry, though. I'll be back for you." Johnny then proceeded to knee spin and gyrate his way up the aisle, eye banging the crowd while scanning the vicinity for his diary, his seething, rhythmic manhood casting a spell certainly on every woman there, not to mention outing roughly half a dozen husbands. Baby beamed at him from the stage, a smile to say, "You did it. We did it. I love you. How am I supposed to go into the Peace Corps after this?" When Johnny reached the back of the lodge, he was met with a brigade of dirty dancing reinforcements. Then, reversing back towards the stage, Johnny led a sultry procession of grinding greasers in lockstep up the aisle to where Baby waited. This was it. It was time to bring the house down. It was time for the angel lift. They had yet to execute this move in front of a live audience, and never was an audience as important as this one. If they didn't nail it, Johnny's career as a summer heartthrob hunk could come crashing down, along with Baby, literally. Lucky for her, though, 41 doctors were on hand if she happened to shatter her tibia. Baby nodded to her partner. She was ready. Johnny stood dead center of the room, sweat dripping, biceps rippling, primed for the final hoist. Baby was helped off the stage by two of Johnny's fancy foot soldiers, and like an Olympic gymnast, took off running towards Johnny. "Here we go!" Baby vaulted off the old wooden planks of the lodge floor and soared into the hands of Johnny, him gripping her waist and raising her elegantly into the air like a porcelain American princess. The audience erupted into joyous applause as Baby floated over the crowd, over the world. It was the pinnacle of her young life, no longer daddy's little girl, no longer afraid of falling into the shadows of privilege. She was her own woman. And at that moment, Johnny's back began to spasm, so he lowered her into his embrace. Now, it was time to party. The rest of the dirty dancers fanned out across the room, lifting folks from their seats, pushing aside chairs, and turning Kellerman's into Studio 54. Everyone joined the dirty dance. Mrs. Hausman grabbed the Kellerman boy. Widowers shed their mink throws and began shaking it. Children's, squirrels, everyone danced. Oh, except Vivian Pressman, who had finally realized she had nothing on Johnny's younger, sweeter dance partner. Storming out of the lodge, someone heard her shout, "Get a nose job!" in Baby's direction. One day, she would. Thinking they could escape for a post-performance quickie, Baby and Johnny bolted towards the door. But before they could exit, Dr. Hausman approached the couple with a humbled look in his eyes. He addressed Johnny first.
"I know you weren't the one that got Penny in trouble."
"Duh," retorted Johnny. Dr. Hausman continued.
When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong.
There was a brief, awkward pause as the three of them stared at each other.
Well, then say it, petitioned Johnny. Say what? Well, you said, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. But then you didn't say anything.
Right, but saying that was me saying I was wrong.
In the context of the sentence, yeah, but not as a statement in itself addressed to me, the person you wronged.
You're right. And when someone's right, I say they're right.
Another pause.
Are you going to say it? Asked Johnny.
Say what? That you were right or that I was wrong?
Forget it. Let me just say this. You were wrong to assume the worst in me. You're just perpetuating a stereotype of my kind, that we're hooligans, lowlifes. And when you treat others like you treated me, then I go home and I take it out on my little brothers, Ponyboy and Soda Pop. And they, in turn, actually become hooligans and lowlifes. We need to break the cycle and respect each other. Rich or poor, we all dance dirty.
You're right, Johnny. And it's not just dancing that connects us.
With that, Dr. Hausman handed Johnny his missing diary with a wink.
I, too, have had Kirk Douglas sex dreams.
He then turned to his daughter.
You looked frigging amazing out there.
Baby embraced her dad. The quickie would have to wait. Nothing kills a girl's sex drive more than a hug from her father. Baby and Johnny danced the remainder of the song, surrounded by friends and family from both sides of the tracks. And there, in the summer's final minutes, Johnny admitted to Baby that he had indeed had the time of his life. Baby gazed into his eyes and reciprocated the feeling with a kiss and a rhythmic pelvic thrust.
Thanks, Mark McKinney. I'm crushing your head. And we'll be right back after this.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
We're back. Each week on the show, we interview someone who works on the film Dirty Dancing. I don't know, guys. Should we listen to that interview now or no?
Let's. Now.
Okay, fine. I'm outvoted. Now.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? This is Kevin Carter, and we are on the interview portion of The Novelizers. And I'm here with Amelia French Toast, who was, this is new to me, the water coordinator for the movie Dirty Dancing. Amelia, how's it going today?
Oh, my God. It's so good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It could be a little bit better. Always better, but, you know, I'm doing all right.
Hey, tell me. What's going on?
You know, just life is lifing right now, you know, the podcast is going great though, you know.
That's good. Listen, I've seen some shit. I totally get it. But I'm really happy to be here and
Not a problem.
Hopefully I can make you smile.
Yeah. I'm smiling already. I'm hurting on the inside, but I'm smiling on the outside. So that's all.
You and me both. Oh man.
So let us know what specifically were you doing as the water coordinator?
Oh man. Okay. So I think this goes without saying, there's water and Dirty Dancing, right? You've got lakes, you've got rain sequences, you've got tendrils of hair with beads of sweat dripping off, because I'll tell you what, they're Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
So you're gonna work up a sweat. And so where the fuck do people think the water comes from? That's where I come in. I'm in charge of the watermelons, all things water.
Just water, it's all you.
All me. So, you know, they go lights, camera, they go sounds, beeps. A lot of people think it's sounds, beeps. It's sounds, beeps. So they go sounds, beeps, action. And I'm throwing buckets and I'm spraying. I've got the Windex full of water or sounds, beeps, ponchos on. And that's where I come in.
Gotcha. So where are you getting the water from? Like you said, there's a lake in the movie. So where are you getting this water from?
I can neither confirm or deny that we're stealing the water from different bodies of water. I can neither confirm or deny. I didn't realize this was CNN. I thought this was a friendly interview.
My apologies. I just wanted to ask the question. I didn't mean anything about it. We can redact that. We don't have to have it on here at all. My apologies.
I can neither confirm or deny that the water is being stolen from the reservoir. I cannot confirm that or deny it.
Okay, because I'm like, are you saying you can either confirm nor deny? Because I'm like, well, then you can do one of them. If you can either.
Listen to me very closely. I can either confirm or deny.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, that answers it perfectly, and I appreciate it. So when you were on the set, like, how did you get this job first and foremost? Like, what happened? How did the call go?
I have been a coordinator of all kinds. I was a wind coordinator on a little film called Twister.
Mm-hmm.
Because they named Wind for Twisters.
Mm-hmm.
I was the sun coordinator for Dune. And so they needed, because of course it's hot there.
It's hot. It's hot there. A lot of desert and dune.
It's
hot.
Get your SPF. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And a couple people didn't, and they got really badly burned. But on this film, they needed someone who not only understood water, but knew what to do with it. And so they called me. You know, they'd had a disaster of an experience with the last guy because he didn't like the dirty dancing. He quit because he thought it was too, he was a prude. And I said, I'm not afraid to get all up in there. I mean, while they're dirty dancing, you don't see me. I'm also humping. Putting the water on. I'm with a little eyedropper. I'm putting beads of sweat. But I'm a part of the action, and you can't be afraid to get up close and personal when you're coordinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads to my next question. There were moments in the movie with Patrick Swayze where he seemed to be sweating a lot, right? Even around certain private areas, there was sweat stains, I guess, right? I'm assuming they weren't actually sweat stains. They were your workings, correct?
Wingo bingo, that's exactly right. And if you look close enough in some freeze frames, you can see I'm spelling different things in the, and that was for my family to say hi. So if you look in his pit stains, you're going to say, hi, Denise.
Gotcha.
That's my daughter. We're estranged, but I want her to know I'm saying hi.
Yeah. And that's good. And that shows that you're a good mother. You know what I'm saying? That you can still do things like that, you know?
I can either confirm or deny that I'm a good mother.
Okay, yeah, let's
which one do you want?
I mean, as a child as well, you know, I would hope you would confirm it, you know, but you know,
I had something in common.
Yeah, exactly. Is this something you always wanted? Like, how was Amelia's life growing up? You know, so like, is this something always just fell into, or you always wanted to do this?
I mean, I was born to a rancher, so I thought I was going to run the ranch. Turns out I had a pig allergy. So I couldn't be on the ranch anymore. Mm. So I got kicked out of the house when I was 16 years old, and I had to figure it out. So I was walking around, and what do? I'm walking in New York City. I look up. I go, wait a minute. This isn't New York City. This is a New York City soundstage. So I ended up on the set with my little bindle. I roamed over to craft services. I had a taco, and I noticed, hey, they need something here. They need something here. And that was, I was the dance coordinator for Footloose. So that's when I got introduced to kind of coordinating. Interesting that I wouldn't be the dance coordinator on Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Similar. But no, but I switched over from movement to the elements. I switched over from, you know, I was doing the dance, I was doing movement choreography. And then I thought, well, no one's been touching wind. No one's been touching sun.
It's an untapped market. It's untapped market.
That's right. I was the cold coordinator for Ice Age.
The computer animated film, you were the code, you coordinated the code for the computer. I just want to make sure, you know, I don't know if you can either confirm nor deny, but I just want to make sure we're clear. Okay.
That was computers? I don't think so.
Okay, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. The one I saw had a sloth in it, and it was done by John Leguizamo. That's the one I saw.
That was him in a sloth suit. That was real.
Okay. All right.
You must just have one of those TVs with HD.
Yeah, I got the HD. I got the HD TV. That's the one I got. Yeah, cool.
Brag, why don't you?
I'm sorry. So, I got a question for you. I've been thinking about this long and hard.
Yep.
The movie The Water Boy.
Right.
After hearing your story about who you are and your job and everything like that, it feels like that was a role for you. That feels like something that you should have been a part. Were you a part of that in any way or anything like that? Because it seems like they're still in your whole style, you know, with that movie.
It's so funny you bring that up. You know, so many people say to me on a daily basis, why are you not in front of the camera? Why are you not in front of the camera? They shake me. They shake me hard. Get in front of the camera. And I say to them, here's why. Mm-hmm. The irony is that I work with water, but if I get in front of a camera, I piss my pants right as soon as they go lights up, sounds, beeps.
So it's not someone spraying water. You're actually pissing this time.
No, I'm physically pissing my pants. I'm you know, people say I'm so nervous I could piss my pants. Well, are they? Well, are they pissing their pants?
I don't know. I don't know if they are or not.
I was the hot coordinator on Pompeii.
Okay. Yeah. So you seem to be a good coordinator. You know what I'm saying? You seem to be a good coordinator, and you seem to be a type of person that that can handle things. Like, I can put things where they need to be and put things in together. Was there any moment during Dirty Dancing where you had struggles? Where it's like, this is not working the way I want it to work?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say they were professional struggles, but I would say they were more personal struggles when me and Patrick Swayze were involved.
Involved in tic-tac-toe, chess.
All right.
I got it.
All I'll say is, Patrick Swayze has seen beneath my navel, if you know what I mean. And that could very well mean I was wearing a crop top. That could mean that I was just wearing a shirt. But it could also mean a lot more, if you know what I'm saying. So that was probably the hardest part for me, was having to continue to work with someone that I had an ongoing sexual relationship with that I can neither confirm or deny.
I must admit, it didn't seem like you were trying to hide that at all. That seemed to come out very, very naturally.
What do you mean? No, I don't want to talk about my ongoing sexual relationship with Patrick Swayze.
All right. I mean, you said his name 6 times. I guess you know it's perfectly fine.
For the record, that's Patrick.
Yeah, we get
S.
Oh, so you don't know how to spell his last name? It seems like you know. Did he like you calling him Swayze? Or because he seemed like a Swayze guy. Did he appreciate you calling him Swayze like that?
Well, because there's a band Swayze, and he didn't want to step on toes. They were first. A lot of people.
He was showing respect. Okay.
A lot of people think Swayze was after. Mm-hmm. They've been around. They just weren't signed yet.
Gotcha.
Chapel Roan worked at a bowling alley before she got signed. It's a journey to get to the top.
Yeah, you know, I get it. This encounter you had with him on set and everything like that, did that affect your job? Like, did that affect your... You know what I'm saying? Like, the way you worked and everything like that. Because you got to think, Patrick Swayze, from what I can see, he seems like a very jealous man. And it was a lot of people dancing in that movie. You was putting sweat on a lot of areas. You know what I'm saying? Like, was he okay with that?
He was jealous. I was jealous. I mean, it's funny. The only water that I wasn't in charge of, because that water flowed itself with tears. And let me tell you something. At night, when we'd break and we'd sneak in and we'd grab a watermelon and we'd break it open and we'd eat at night under the moonlight, he would cry himself to sleep, seeing me riding all sorts of people, dropping beads of sweat. And listen, a part of the job for me as well was getting close with a number of people on set. So yeah, I think it was hard for Swayze. We did end our, I don't know what you want to call it, midway through production when my husband came to visit.
Okay. Nice bombshell. All right.
You know, and say what you will and say, you know, and you know, agree to disagree here, but out of sight, out of mind. Am I right? What happens in Vegas?
Listen, we're on the same page. Same page.
But it's funny. My husband is an intimacy coordinator. So the irony's not lost on me.
Yeah, the irony is all over the place. But
funny for someone to be an intimacy coordinator. Can't keep it up.
I'm sorry. One thing I want to let you know is I actually write screenplays and stuff like that. And I'm trying to get my foot out there in LA and everything like that.
Of course.
And I've interviewed a lot of people, and I'm like just trying to basically. There's a lot of doors. I'm opening every last one of them and see which one's closed.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to get your opinion on it. The name of the screenplay is called Earth, Wind, and Fire. I don't know how long it's going to last, but I mean, as far as the name and everything, but it's about all these elements of a singing group, but it involves actual elements of, you know, some earth, wind, and fire, where we have to do the like group slash superheroes. And that's what it's about. But you know the elements more than I do. You've coordinated on so many different, you know, say movies and stuff. It's like, I would definitely need your help with that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I could definitely cover earth. I could definitely cover wind. I can't touch fire.
You can't touch fire?
I will not touch fire. The fire, that's an element. It's too powerful. It's too powerful. There's only one man who I've ever seen touch fire, fire coordinator, and that's Sansi Scoops. May he bless in peace. I'm not sure if he's dead, but he's a tricky guy.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous job. It's a dangerous job. You know, there's stunt coordinating, sure, and then the fire coordinator has to, I don't know why it goes this way, they have to burn alive in the fire. That's part of the job. And so... I would be able to do earth and wind, and we could contact him and see, but I think that's wonderful. Did you get the IP from the band, or is this just you sort of going YOLO, we'll see?
I'm YOLOing it. I'm YOLOing the situation. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
I think you should be fine on a legal standpoint. I think you should be fine.
That's good. The only thing I was thinking, I was like, you know, for fire, maybe I can get Kevin Spacey. Because he was covered in fire as Ghost Rider. I mean, I think he knows a lot about fire, I would assume.
Well, and there's that Denzel Washington film, Man on Fire.
Man on Fire.
And so I don't know if you could get Denzel, but maybe you could get Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, I think Dakota might be a little more reachable than Denzel.
She's pretty fiery. I hear she's a fire sign.
Yeah.
So you could do Dakota Fanning. If you're going to write a story or a movie about a band or someone who's alive or dead, you don't need to get the rights if it's nice. If you're nice, you don't need the rights. So if it's a nice screenplay, you should be no problems.
Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Oh, my gosh.
Nice?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. It's a nice film. It's a nice film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think I was thinking Nicolas Cage. Nice, I think I was thinking Nicolas Cage, not Kevin Spacey. I think Nick Cage did Ghost Rider. They look alike to me.
That's right.
I don't know why they look alike to me.
A lot of white men look alike. Let's be real. That's why I got Swayze and my husband mixed up. Who can blame me?
Yeah.
My husband, on the other hand, can't stay hard, though.
Before you share too much information, I want to thank you for joining us for the podcast and this interview today. It's been a real treat.
My social security number is 9.
Well, you don't have to know. You don't have to. Blank, 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 blank.
439-999-999.
Before anybody... does a crime of any sort for identity theft. I've been Kevin Carter. This has been Amelia French Toast. You guys have a good one. You listen to the Novelizers.
Well, that's it. Another Novelizers in the can, in the rear. That's it. Special thanks to the really handsome Craig Baldo, Mark McKinney, and Hannah Pilkus. I mean, Craig and Mark and I are handsome, and Hannah's beautiful. I cut all this part out. I don't know why I said anything.
Join us next week for our epilogue episode with Michael Chernus from Severance and Scott Adsit from 30 Rock and the voice of Baymax in Big Hero 6.
Yes.
You won't want to miss that episode, Steve.
You'd be insane to.
I won't. I promise.
You'd be totally crazy.
The Novelizers is hosted by Dave Hill with Stephen Levinson and produced by Stephen, Cole Emoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bullen, Dennis DiClaudio, and Rob Kuttner. And distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Mixed and edited by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emoff. Art direction by Crystal Dennis. Theme song written by Andrew Lynn and performed by Nick Testa. Follow the Novelizers on Threads, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers LLC. Take us out, Dave Hill.
There was a baby put in the corner. There was a guy who could give your mom a boner. He taught her dancing. It took a minute and she flew into his arms just like an egret. Novelize that movie. Write a book and also read it to me.